Hello everyone. It's been a while since I could see. It's the 16th of October. This much I know. This much is true. It's been a while. It has been a while. Been very, very busy. Working a lot. Trying to study in between. And chasing the witch is what I've been doing mainly. Just move those plates there. Chasing the witch. I've been trying to, as War Winston Churchill once said, keep the black dog at bay. What I want to talk about for this episode is anxiety. So, as you know by now, this is completely unscripted or what have you, and it's genuinely seat of my pants stuff. I've just done a live video stream because I wanted to rehearse. I'm playing a gig at the Nerd Hutch in Newcastle on the 2nd of November with two great friends of mine, Kath and Phil Tyler, and somebody who I would like, you know, who I would call a, well, we're not really close, he stopped in my house before, but I'd like to think we're becoming friends, Howie Reeve. Check out Howie, look for him on Bandcamp. He's got an album, just released his second album, I believe, called We Are In Repair. And that title alone is... that fits in with today's topic, I think. So yeah, I'm playing that gig. So I wanted to have a rehearsal today because I went away to Paris last week, and that was my holiday for the year and a bit. And frankly, I won't get into it too much. It was great, loved it, but it was interrupted by work, and I'm not sure. Whoever I'm talking to, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who would be able to relate to. It doesn't matter how long the interruption, it might just be a nudge, but any interruption can ruin a period of time that you've set aside, that you've fought for almost to relax and switch off. It can just be disastrous, and it was a little bit. It did kind of taint things. So I've been away. I've come back from that, and then immediately I did 3 full days and nights, from the Friday 8 a.m. through to Sunday 10 p.m. And this weekend gone, and then. I had a meeting, a big meeting on the Monday, so I finished at 10 p.m. and work is quite a distance away from me, so by the time I get home it's after 11. That's a long drive. So then I only had that between sort of 11 until I got up, and then I was at a meeting on the Monday, and then I was with good buddy Roy Brown for most of the remainder of that day, working on music and stuff. So whilst that's doing what I want, it was still, you know, I still consider that work. It's definitely work in terms of anxiety, trying to fight through, if you're working on music specifically, and it's something new, just trying to keep that black dog away that says, you know, you're shit, why are you doing this? Why are you even trying right now? Which is actually something that voice, that guy is in the room now as I'm doing this live broadcast. I mean, I just had a passing thought there as I was saying that, in running parallel to what I was saying. The thought was, why are you doing this? And I almost wanted to press go off air. I'm in that place right now. It's a very difficult spot, as I think a lot of people will be able to identify. So yeah, and then Tuesday I was back at work again, 8 a.m. till 9 p.m. Yesterday I was at work. I had training all day and then a shift at work. And today I had an appointment, a very important appointment. for me. And then I've got home. And I thought, you know what? I haven't got much time here. I've got, like, now, part of tomorrow, and then to work again. I've got a lot of uni work I need to get done. I've got an assignment due, and I'm going away with work next week for an entire week up in Edinburgh. So I'll not be able to do any of this, not be able to rehearse any music or anything. So anxiety, it kind of atrophied and went, you know, through the roof. And I thought, right, let's set up an amp, some effects pedals that I use, and just do a little rehearsal, you know. And I got through that, and I thought I'd stream that and share that, because that I haven't done a live stream yet, video-wise, and I thought it'd be cool while I've got the chance to do that. And I've done that, sat and watched it back, and I thought, God, I should really do a podcast. I'd like to do that right now, because it feels like it's been a very heavy... Since the last time I did this, it's been pretty pretty rough. So, I mean, speaking of anxiety, I think it's anxiety that's led me to do this. You know, it's bullied me into to just to giving up and saying, right, okay, we'll do this. To be honest, I don't think I'm really in the mood. I don't know if I genuinely want to do it, but this is anxiety's dichotomy, I guess. I'm talking. It might come across as generalised, yeah, but, you know, disclaimer alert, it's me. The hell was that? Speaking of my own, it's subjective to me, so, but I'm obviously going to speak in general terms, like, it is, you know, there's going to be a definite sort of article or whatever, this is the account, but, yeah, be aware that it's just personal to me. So anxiety's not so much nudged, but kicked us right up the perineum and said, right, do a fucking podcast. But then the dichotomy is, well, at least it's given us that kick. And I find that thematically in my life, anything I do achieve is, I guess it's born out of fear and anxiety. There is obviously a sense of enjoying these things, but I only enjoy them when they're actually happening. I'm starting to loosen up now, for instance, and starting to enjoy it, but like in terms of writing a song, the only real enjoyment is the work, is and even that sometimes, I mean, it's like there was a famous quote about writers, I can't remember who it's attributed to exactly, it was someone fucking great anyway, probably Hemingway, always, it's usually him, that writers, or people who don't enjoy writing, something like that. You know, it's tough. It's, and I don't mean tough in the same way that going down a mine shaft and working for 2 yen a year is tough. Just keep some perspective on that. I'm not trying to paint myself or fellow writers as victims or anything. But it can be tough. It's a real struggle if you're genuine about it. Anyway, if you take it seriously, and I'm reading Stephen King's memoir at the moment, which I borrowed off my best pal James. James Younger, there you go. There's his full name. There's a name drop. I hope he likes it. I've been reading it. It's fantastic. I mean, I've only really read some of the Dark Tower series of Stephen King. I always viewed him as I took his detractors very seriously. I get pinned with this shitlet type throwaway airport thing, I guess. And I think he addresses all that in the book, actually. It's really good. Talks about the prolific tag he's given, but again, his bar is set really high too. He thinks of another novelist, I think it's Anthony Trollope, who wrote something like 500, you know, some ridiculous number of, well, no, it wasn't Trollope, it was, what he said about Trollope was his books are, you know, it's like Tolstoy in length, so that's what he's talking about in terms of prolific nature. But there was another author he mentioned, I'm sure it was like a detective, maybe he's a noir novelist, who had written 500 plus novels, which he was like, you know, people say to me I'm prolific because I've written something like 35 novels, there's a guy who wrote 500. So he's not able to in that I identify my drive and things. It's like your perception is completely skewed, your self-perception. You try to, this is something that happened, that was a huge part of my cognitive analytical therapy, was I was encouraged to give myself a fairer appraisal. It was determined that, owing to an abandonment of a parent, I was left, you know, there was a poverty of an assuring voice. You know, there was a parent there who remained, and, you know, namely my dad, who's, you know, the best person, if I may be so bold, probably the best person ever, besides little Richard. And he's great and everything, but to be quite glib about it, we had, for many reasons, quite a distance between us for a lot of years, even though we were left to get on with things. So I just felt a lot of isolation growing up, and in the, you know, the paucity of an assuring voice, you know, that maternal voice that says, in moments where you're like, God, and these are moments that are almost every other breath for me, you know, like, oh shit, I'm worthless, I'm useless, everyone's better than me, I'm no good, why do I even try, why do anything? I mean, I was sat at an appointment I mentioned today and going through some paperwork with this medical professional. As I'm watching her write down the answers to questions, it just suddenly struck me like a hammer to the head, you know, why even write anything, why are you writing that down, why am I even here, why are you providing this service? It's all very, it's hilariously fatalistic, when that, it's almost hilarious, isn't it, really, that I would have that kind of thought, and it's such an innocent moment, like, oh God, let's just throw the chips in now, why are we even trying, why should I even answer how tall I am, and if I have a history of heart problems, or, you know, I just get that way sometimes. It's a complete, I go underground. I just don't want to, even the simplest, most mundane things. So, you know, I can talk about artistic pursuits and feeling completely browbeaten and just thinking, oh, fuck this, I'm not even going to try anymore. It can be as simple as that, as at an appointment. It's way more. The catchment area is far, far wider than that. It's in general, like, what, God, why even put on clothes today and get out of bed? I'm laughing, but it's not funny. So where was I going? Oh, yeah, the Stephen King book. And talking about the craft of writing. I don't even know why I got into Stephen King, and there's no way of me backtracking and rewinding to find out where the segue link was there, but never mind. His insecurities as somebody who's probably, along with your Tom Clancy's and John Grisham's, like one of the biggest selling authors and most widely read writers of all time. He's still, you know, he's got his anxious. You know, his attacks of anxiety, in terms of his benchmark, is set somewhere that I wasn't privy to. So I guess in terms of fairer appraisal, which I was always encouraged to do, which basically means have some perspective, you know, rather than getting carried away and getting drunk on depression, which is hard because that is part of depression. You know, that's another thing. Depression is an anxiety, but depression mainly. I would separate the two. And I'll explain why here. I mean, the depression is kind of a very broad umbrella term, but it's so deeply nuanced. There are a million offshoots, I would say, you know, a million I just picked from the sky, but I would say. It's like saying, what's it good? It's tantamount to perhaps saying that there's only one cancer, for instance, I guess. You know, there's always going to be specific areas. And with depression, it manifests in different ways. And there are a million factors that feed in to the disorder. And what was I saying? the fair appraisal, to get back to fair appraisal. So the idea of trying to remain somewhat, trying to regain a bit of balance in your outlook. So, you know, people say depression, oh, you're depressed, pull your socks up, or, it's all mopey and misery, oh, it's like Morrissey's just depressing, or Radiohead, it's depressing. And it's kind of this idea that depression is just a whinge or something, or just everyone's all doom and gloom, but actually it's a lot more than that. And I think we're seeing a shift in that culturally at the moment through many different facets. I think that most recently I noticed that with the death of Robin Williams, which kind of did break my heart, and I'm not ashamed to say that. And I think there's a lot of very cruel things said on social media. That's just the world we're in today. A lot of things, you know, we saw it with Zelda Williams as well, the daughter of Robin. She was very sadly and pathetically attacked for daring to post pictures of her deceased father. You know, she was called, you know, it's this culture of, oh, get over it, you know, like, nobody, there's a lot of people who don't seem to want to hear about the struggles of others, because it's involving others, not themselves. And that's another part of depression, being the self-centered nature, which I really try to keep a tab on and try to be aware of. But I feel like I'm going off on a lot of tangents here, and I'm trying to rein in. I'm keeping in the back of my mind fair appraisal. I want to return to that. So remind us on later. But with Robin, I saw on social media as well. I remember somebody whose name I forget, otherwise I would drop the name right now. But they put, it might have been in reference to something else. This might be me as a depressive running away with the ball here and jumping to conclusions. That's a huge part of my depression anyway, is this negative. It is very fatalistic, and everything's taken. It's apparent. It's almost paranoia, which again is another arm of depression. That everything is negative, and that, you know, somebody might say something that's completely irrelevant to me. They're referring to something else, and I'll take it to heart. I'll draw it back to myself, which again speaks to the self-centered aspect of depression. Maybe should have given this person the benefit of the doubt, but it was at the time, and, you know, the news feeds were clogged up with, oh, Robin Williams has died, I'm so sad, I love Mrs. Doubtfire, oh, what do I do about this now? I'll tell you what was said first by this person. It was a lot of grief leeches around here at the minute. That's a cynical thing to say anyway. Cynicism, another arm of depression. But I understand it. I mean, how many times we've all met that person where, you know, everything's a drama, and they might be, I'm sure you've probably got this person in your life right now. I've got a new one I've recently inherited, and this is, it's fucking fun, like, and where, you know, the person will be, they'll act completely inappropriately, or do a lot of things that are wrong or offensive, but then you're expected to write it all off because, you know, their great uncle who they loved when they were seven has just had a hernia and they're feeling really bad about it, or I've just been to a funeral for a lad. You know, there's this constant trading off on poor behaviour with some sort of grief, no matter how trivial or it's an age old thing, isn't it? It's using the misery of others as a weapon to justify yourself, to justify why you might be, it's just being a cunt, basically, to put it beautifully. And so I get that. I get why the guy on Facebook said, you know, about the grief leeches. Because there are a lot of... These people do exist. And especially when it comes to celebrity culture. I mean, I do it, hands up. I absolutely almost... I don't know. A lot of people I admire, certainly I've trying to word this carefully, I guess. I mean, I guess I just draw a lot of things back to myself, and it's while we're talking about him, you know, Robin Williams. I did that. The guy was. I'm trying to explain how I would relate him and his loss back to me personally, but it's all about it's a self-centered thing, and it's a huge, it's prevalent, it's absolutely prevalent right now with social media. Everything is about, I think, is about you drawing it all back to yourself. We're using totems, we're using there's a lot of symbolism rather than actual content or substance now, so you're able to, you know, through avatars online or whatever, just try and give clues to people. They're like signposts and clues to people as to what you're really like, what your nature's like, by liking a video of, say, Robin Williams. I like, you know, Mark's just liked this video of Robin Williams performing this bit. What's the bit about? Or it's about this, it's a political stand-up routine. And that's my way of saying, I agree with that. This is what I'm like. Me. Not Robin Williams, but now this is for you to look at and go, oh, I'm impressed by Mark liking that. And it's ridiculous because I've done nothing there. I've not achieved anything. It's the same thing when people, I don't know, pipe up and start saying, oh, I finished reading War and Peace last night, just to keep with the Tolstoy reference earlier. And is that supposed to impress somebody? I don't see how it should, but we all do it. I do it. Well, most of I can't speak for the entire world. Not yet, anyway. Just if the plan is pulled off, though. I think we all do. I'm certainly guilty of it. And that's social media. If it isn't, oh, God, I fucking hate my life and I want to die right now. It's, look what I did. Look at what I did. I did this. Are you impressed? Oh, I like this video. It shows that I have taste. It shows that I'm aware of this... this small nook of the world, this underground, it might be a musician who nobody's heard of. Ooh, Mark liked that. He must be interesting. Well, it doesn't really speak to anything of me and who I am, really. Or that all I've done is I haven't done much more than the recipient of that that like thing on the newsfeed. I've done nothing more than what they've done and clicked a button to say I like it. I might not have even fucking watched it. Sometimes that happens. I might even just watch half a video and like it because I'm... either want a reference point for me to go back to in the future to finish watching. Back to in the future. Hey, great Scott, I would want to go back and finish watching it at some point. So it doesn't mean anything. None of it means anything. But I'm just trying to be really honest right now and tell you that I do that. And I think it's okay to do that. It obviously is okay because a lot of people do it. It's all over the internet. That's kind of what the internet is right now. But nobody's seeing it. Because we're all closely guarding this mythology of ourselves. That's what it seems to me. And the Generation Wuss, or whatever Bret Easton Ellis has just coined for us lot. Although he did say it was people who were born post-1989, I was born in 1985. I would still consider myself part of this Wussy generation. What's 4 years difference anyway? Why split hairs over wussiness? We're kind of all just doing that. And it's shallow. We're not really revealing who we are to anyone, which is fine. We don't have to. Like, I don't have to do this now. You certainly don't have to. Nobody has to. Nobody should have to or should even feel the need to. I just personally want to do it. And part of that is through an anxiety that implores me to do so. But just keeping on the Robin Williams thing for now. When he did, when Robin died and everyone was online and, you know, for once being quite optimistic about things, maybe because I was biased, because it's Robin. If say, for instance, it was someone I don't like who died, and if we keep it on a comedic bent, say it was, Michael McIntyre had died and everyone started, posting things about how he touched their lives. Well, you wouldn't be on my news feed for a start, but maybe I wouldn't feel the same. Maybe I'd be like, oh, fuck off. But that's a bad example, because if you were doing that about Michael McIntyre, then you do seriously need to fuck off. But the thing with this case was, I mean, Robin Williams really, really did touch me emotionally. I'll finish that sentence before it gets really inappropriate. He really did. I'm not get too much into it now, but I mean, I would count maybe 5 films of his that have really been. And this is what I mean. This is the whole point of this podcast, you know, talking about art as a very serious, endeavor, as a very serious mark on people's lives, on my life certainly. Yes, it can be a case of it being reduced to just a signpost to help guide people towards what I'm like. I've done that with films, you know. A lot of the time, I've met potential suitors, when I've met lady friends, I'm aware I've purposely sat them down to watch certain films or read certain books to give them an idea. And maybe there's nothing wrong with that, but when I'm talking about when you do it online, it is quite shallow. But I mean, I've probably pointed everyone I've ever started to know directly to Edward Scissorhands. In the hopes that they can read through the fucking obvious metaphor for that film and relate it straight back to me. You know, the incomplete, kind of lost outsider who ruins everything that he touches. There you go, I said it. And you can roll your eyes if you want. And if you do, fuck off. So yeah, with Robin, I mean, films like The Fisher King, Good Will Hunting, even like Jack, I guess he had this, he was definitely tarnished with this reputation for going for these kind of maudlin movies that were over sentimental, but I guess I've always been very sentimental, and a lot of his films really, really got to me and really, you know, always invariably made me cry my eyes out, especially Good Will Hunting and Awakenings. There's a reason he chose those types of films. I guess I run the risk of coming across as overly sentimental and that, as a negative thing, which is what happened to him, and that's why I liked him. He wasn't afraid to make those choices in the roles he portrayed. Yeah, some of them might have been ridiculously shite, like What Dreams May Come and things like that. But he obviously had an emotional attachment to these stories. And I don't know, he's always been there. He's always been that guy he's always been there. And he came along at a time when, you know, the formative years for our us generation. And then it's the classic age-old, again, story of, you know, the Tears of a Clown, I guess, that really, the shock when I turned on the television. I had a text of a friend who said, check the news, I can't believe it. And you think, right, somebody's died, who's it going to be? Who's on the Deadpool? Poor Deadpool, it's got to be Brucey, hasn't it? And then you see, no, it's Robin Williams. So what bothered me about the Grief Leech thing was, you know, we have to get away from this, I don't know where it's come down from, you know, is it the patriarchy? You know, I think it's a male thing where you're not allowed to. It's basically, it's been said, it's doctrinaire. You can't feel sad when a celebrity's died. It's preposterous, you know, roll your sleeves on, get on with it. And as somebody who cared for his mother and lost her just before Christmas last year, my rebuttal was, you know, I know grief, you know, lose a parent, then we'll talk. I feel, even though I kind of held my mother's hand towards her death for those few months, and I went through all that, I still felt absolutely devastated when Robin Williams died. And I allowed myself to do so. I didn't try to put a cork on that. I didn't say, no, this isn't, you know, it's not acceptable. You know, be realistic. Well, emotions sometimes aren't rooted in realism. You know, they're flamboyant little fuckers, aren't they? They go flying around, and I mean that's what they are. You're allowed to indulge them at times, certainly. Why not? Why have I got to keep that in check? Why am I suddenly labelled a leech for grief? I understand there are some people who just look for any excuse to be sad, and that's part of depression, and that's something I can relate to. Yes, I've done it my entire life. Always had to almost sort out a drama or some sort of conflict. And this is maybe the point in the show again where I reference my own writing, because it's just struck me that I wrote recently. We got caught up in the drama, in a crisis I can cope. It's only when I stop to wonder that I see the lack of hope. So it's almost misery and crises as a distraction, as a justification to live, really, which I think is a trait of most depressives. Probably going to wrap up shortly because I want to do this in two parts because it makes it quite difficult to upload the episodes if they're done in hour long bits. So let's wrap this up for part one, and I'm going to immediately go live here after this, so stick around if you are listening live. If not, we'll catch you in part two. Well, go into more detail about anxiety specifically. I think I've got a little bit off track about all and sundry, but that's the nature of this show, the Intelligent Gentleman podcast. We go in unscripted, kind of ad hoc. I walked in today to do a little rehearsal of a song, did that, and then thought, let's podcast. So it's all on the fly. So this is the end of part one. If you're listening to this retrospectively, please subscribe. I'm in the iTunes store now. I'll go into that in the next episode. That's been sorted. So you can search for me in the Apple store and subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, so you can listen to my dulcet tones on the go. Until the next time, which for you live listeners is going to be about 30 seconds, you have got to stay sexy. All right, good night and good luck.